Authentically Rachel podcast, where I, Rachel, bring you authentically life-giving conversations that demonstrate the reality of God's sovereignty. God knows that we go through difficult times, and it's how we respond to these circumstances that set us apart. God knows our suffering and holds us in the palm of His hand. Today on the podcast, I'm having a conversation with Rachel Wagner. She's a wife, homeschool mom of two beautiful children, a writer, and leads her church in worship alongside her husband. In 2012, she suffered the first of six tragic miscarriages, and she is here with me today to share her story of how God drew her closer to Himself during such difficult times. Welcome to the podcast, Rachel. I'm so glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
When you first got married, what were your initial thoughts on how your family would look like?
I think that Carson and I were blissfully unaware of how common miscarriage was. So I'm one of four kids. He's one of nine kids. So we wanted a big family. And just kind of, I think I had the number four in my head. But when we first started trying to grow our family, miscarriage was like not even on the radar. It kind of felt like whenever we want to start trying to have a family, it'll look like this and we'll have them 2 years apart. And we were very idealistic.
When did you get married?
2010.
So mm-hmm. It was 2 years after. Was she your first child that you miscarried? Or?
Yes. We hadn't been trying for very long. And we went into that, first appointment. And first appointment was fine. The second appointment was when we were told that we were probably going to miscarry in the next week or so. And our doctor was a believer and was very gracious about delivering that news and honoring that life. But it was very shocking to both of us. My husband is a everything will probably be fine kind of a guy. Mm-hmm. I am a prepare for the worst, hope for the best kind of a person. And I just didn't even know to prepare for that. So that loss just shattered my idea of what our family would look like. And it started to become like this tentative dream that I held that I was like, I don't actually know if this is going to happen or if we're even going to be able to have kids, because it was our first miscarriage, not knowing how common that
right,
was.
Right. So you have two. Mm-hmm. Where are they in the lineup?
We miscarried our first, and then we got pregnant again, I think the next year with Daphne, and she's now 10 years old. And then we wanted to have a second. And so about a year later, we started trying for our second, and we lost that baby. Mm. And after that loss, I think a couple months later, shortly, we got pregnant with my son. He's eight. And then after my son, we really wanted to have a third. We were like, we'll just have one more. And we miscarried four babies after him.
Oh.
Yeah.
So how did you feel seeing other women your age having healthy full-term pregnancies?
Yes.
Did you feel shut out from being able to share your grief?
There's a phenomenon called the frequency illusion, where you see a concept or an idea, a word or a product more frequently after becoming aware of it. And I feel like after our miscarriage, I saw moms and babies and onesies and pregnancy announcements all the time. Mm. It was like everywhere I turned, even if I tried to avoid it, it was just everywhere. And so I did avoid social media for a while because it felt like every time I pulled it open, somebody my age was announcing a pregnancy. And I think the most difficult season where that was lived out for me and was hard was after we had miscarried our sixth, prayerfully and through medical advice, we decided our family's complete. We're not going to try to have any more babies. And I had just so thought, I'll have a third. Like, we'll end on a high note. Surely we'll be able to carry baby to term. And so not only was I grieving the loss of that child, and that was the only child we found out the gender and were able to kind of get some answers. So not only was I grieving that child, but I was then grieving the death of the dream of what my family would look like.
Yeah.
And at that time, both of my sisters-in-law became pregnant with their third babies.
Oof.
And
gut punch.
Yeah. They are awesome and wonderful and so sensitive and loving, and they've both miscarried themselves. So they were very gracious and sensitive. But that was the hardest, having to watch somebody have that third kid and yeah. that I never got to have. It took months before I could hold my nephews. They both had two beautiful baby boys, and it took a while. And here I am. That was like, you know, 4 years after my first miscarriage, and it felt like that was harder than my first miscarriage and watching my friends all become pregnant for the first time.
Oh, man. Harder. It's so hard when you're in a position to have something given to someone else that you want so bad.
Yeah.
Like feeling othered, feeling different, feeling, you know, it can be like almost like a piece of you is missing, mm-hmm. that I'm normal, mm-hmm. but through God's grace and, you know, trusting in Him, the fact that He knows He created you, mm-hmm. He knew your miscarriages, He knew, relying on that strength and having that faith helps you move on and accept, mm-hmm. you know, the struggles that happen in life.
Yeah.
How have your husband and two children supported you during your losses?
Yeah, Carson and I'm so thankful for him. We got married really young, and when we look at 20-year-olds now, we're like, how did our parents let us get married at 20? Like, we knew nothing, but the Lord knew that we were for each other. And I think that one of the things in sharing my story that I think is really important is for spouses to understand that they are both going to grieve differently. Mm. Not only do men and women generally grieve differently, but by personality, you're going to grieve differently. So for me, I wanted to feel every emotion to the nth degree. I wanted to stay in it, not only because it felt like that was also honoring that child, that life, but I was really trusting the Lord with my pain. And I was like, Lord, I want to squeeze every faith, every ounce of faith out of this trial. I want it all. My husband, he has changed over the years, but especially early on, he read very disconnected to me. And it was difficult for me because I did feel more alone in our marriage, in the grieving. And we are very open with each other. We have a great relationship where we do not have to wonder what the other one is thinking. We feel very comfortable coming to each other. And at one point I told him, I said, I feel like you're not, like, this wasn't a child to you. I feel like you're like, well, these things happen, and, you know, just kind of, you've moved on. And he really helped me understand. He said that he would go to, he was at a church in Texas. We were on staff at the time, and he would either go early to work, or in the afternoon he would go play basketball at mm-hmm. the gym in the church. And he said, when I play basketball, I know what I'm doing with my hands. It's kind of like muscle memory. It's something to do. And he said, that's me grieving. That's me giving myself space. And he told me, I found myself crying on the court or just tearing up because I'm letting myself grieve, but almost like he needed something to do with his hands. As a guy, like I want to be doing something. And so it has helped me understand how different people, not just how my husband, but how different people grieve, that everybody grieves differently. And it is not anybody's place to determine how you're grieving, what you should be doing, where you should be. He's also told me that, because one of the things that I talk about with other women who have miscarried is different triggers, something that it just puts you right back in that hospital room or the bathroom floor, like just, it just takes you right back. And I was talking about that with my husband, and he said, you know, I have triggers too. Mm. And I didn't know that. And we miscarried 6 times, and the majority of those miscarriages happened while he was at work or even leading worship on a Sunday. And I would call him, and he said, every time you call me on the phone, it is a trigger. Ugh. And to this day, it's less of a related trigger because time has passed. But I still, if I call him, I started off with, I'm fine. Everything's fine. Just, you know, to let him know. But I think that being able to talk to my husband about how we grieve differently, and he's always been very understanding and compassionate about how I grieve, even though it's been very different than him.
And I think women are, well, I know women are way more relational and way more feeling oriented and feeling driven. So I completely can understand that it's the basketball court that helped him through his time of going through such horrific circumstances.
But I also know a couple who that role is reversed, and the husband is more emotional and more open and willing to talk about the miscarriages and losses, and the wife is more private and is more private about even her grieving. And I know that, like, even that is different. And when I was miscarrying, there were no books or resources about this.
So often miscarriage, it seems like it's common, but we as a society don't give it the importance that it needs. We can say we value life, but with a miscarriage, you know, it's kind of like, oh, I'm sorry, without really understanding, no, that's a life that was created in the image of God, that he knew and he created it.
I think there are some communities, even in our faith communities, that it's still difficult to talk about miscarriage. And these are the same communities that are all up in arms about abortion. And I'm with you on that. I am anti-abortion. But I think in the pro-life movement, if we're going to picket abortion, we need to grieve miscarriage. But I do think that for some believers, anger is easier than grief. And so being angry at our country's problem with abortion and the sanctity of life is easier than grieving an unexplained loss that you can't just find a good explanation for.
Preach it, Rachel. Preach it. So you, obviously, your husband led worship and you lead worship. What was it like for you to get up and sing worship music in front of the congregation when you were personally going through such a dark and devastating time?
Yeah, well, sometimes I didn't. In that season of life, he was on staff at a mega church, and so I was one of the volunteer worship leaders. And
was it Joel Olstein's?
No, it was not. No.
kidding.
Yes. But I had a great relationship with my worship pastor there at the time. He was a really good friend, and he was very good about, you know, checking in, how are you doing, and just giving me permission to say, like, you don't have to be up here. This is okay. So I don't know, honestly, that I was leading worship on the platform regularly at the time. I did take a step back from that, but I heartily believe that the way that we lead ourselves in the pew is how a worship leader should lead the church. That is, you can't lead the church in worship until you know how to lead your own self in worship. So leading my own heart in worship at that time was very, very difficult. After our third, it was actually in the middle of our third miscarriage, we had a women's conference at our church, and the co-founders of the She Reads Truth Ministries, they were coming to speak. And I love that ministry. I love the She Reads Truth Bible and their Bible studies. And our women's director at the time asked if I would be willing to basically be their chauffeur for the weekend and drive them around. So obviously, I'm excited to have two godly women who I really admire in my car. But I'm physically miscarrying at the time. Like, I'm walking around with a pad and feeling, I'm standing there feeling the loss physically during a time that I'm sitting across from some of my heroes in the faith and women who, one of the co-founders of She Reads Truth, she lost a daughter and had been through that. And I remember that weekend, the worship for that weekend, I couldn't do it. I my hands were in my pocket, and I couldn't sing the words. And I'm pretty sure that the song was Good, Good Father. So it was all about God's goodness. And I, at that time, I was not sure. I was pretty angry at God. And I believe that anger is a secondary emotion. If you chase that down, there's usually something else. I was hurt by God. I felt like, man, what am I doing here that you see so fit to let me carry so much death in my belly? And one of the girls from She Reads Truth, she actually mailed me after the fact a book. It's called Struck by Russ Ramsey. And it has nothing to do with miscarriage, but it was his in real time reconciling a life-altering health diagnosis. And over again in the book, he says, "And yet I trust him. Mm-hmm. What else can I do?" And it felt like something I could hold on to, where I could say, I do not really believe what I'm singing, but I think that one day I will. And so what else can I do? I'm just going to sing these songs in the faith that one day this is something that I'm going to believe to my core.
Yeah. So you said you were with the heroes mm-hmm. of the faith. You were physically miscarrying. Were you able to share that with them and get their thoughts?
Or? Yes, I was. Okay. And the Lord has just been so good to me in every time that I have been physically miscarrying. It's been very strange. He has made a way for me to meet very encouraging, important people to me. So during that third miscarriage, meeting Rachel Myers and Amanda Williams and
Mic drop.
They were so encouraging to me. And Rachel Myers has lost a child. So being able to sit in the car with her.
Is it spelled the correct way?
It is not.
All right. Well, she's an amazing lady.
No, they were very encouraging, and they were very much like, just they didn't give me a platitude or a scripture or a silver lining. It was just grieving with me. And the Lord knew I would need that.
How has worship helped you endure the hardships that life inevitably brings? I know for me, when I was going through my time, I remember my dad had Carrie Underwood singing, I forget the song, but she was singing a worship song. Mm. And he had that on repeat. Maybe it was Amazing Grace. Mm. I'm not sure, but it was amazing.
Yeah.
So how were you affected by worship during that time?
Yeah. Music is such a clear gift from the Lord. Like in a nursing home, and you've got people who can't remember their families, but you start singing Amazing Grace and they know every word, and they're, 10 years old in their old community church. It just holds so much ability to recall. And I couldn't tell you specific songs that, were anchor songs. I know that there were some, but I think that for me, the act of singing is a very natural one for me. And the act of singing a song or having a melody stuck in your head that has words that you are struggling to believe, I think is really important. When we in church sing, for example, Good, Good Father, He's a Good, Good Father. It's who he is. And that's such a repetitive song.
Mm.
But when you are in the thick of grief and pain, you need to sing, it's who you are. It's who you are. You're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. You need to sing that 30 times because you're preaching the truth to yourself. And one of the things that I really learned walking with the Lord in miscarriage is how valuable it is to preach the truth to myself. And worship songs, they gave me a template, a format, and literally a melody to do that.
I think the human brain is so fascinating. I remember in college when I was learning anatomy and physiology, I would physically sing the words of the muscles.
Oh, wow.
I would just come up with, little ditty,
mm-hmm.
like the biceps, brachii, that kind of thing. And I think it's another thing that helps us humans to learn. And I think one way, and I'm really challenged by having memories that, it's hard for me to grasp on to new learning.
Mm.
And so by singing or by coming up with, a repetition, that's another nail in the coffin where another side of the brain connects.
Mm.
Another mm-hmm. neural pathway is connected and all that. So I 100% agree with just the repetition and the melody mm-hmm. and the physical act of, God, you're a good, good father, and repeating that to yourself.
Because mm-hmm. sometimes in some seasons of life, that is an anthem that you can declare because you believe it down to the toes. Like you are like, I believe this.
And if you can feel your toes.
If you, yeah, I guess so. And singing it in a congregation, especially because my husband's a worship pastor. And so, he has conversations about songs that are wonderful songs, but can we sing them in a congregation? Just knowing that in that room, there's 100 different stories, and we encourage each other when we, with all voices, sing a song. But to know I'm declaring this because I believe it, but two rows behind me, they may not believe it.
Mm.
So I'm going to declare it for them. They may not even know my story, but I'm going to, in faith, believe that God is good and that I have a story to tell and that his goodness is seen in my story, even though it might look on the outside like it is just loss and grief and unexplained suffering and unresolved suffering. He has been good to me in the meantime. There's a blog post, I can't remember her name, that a friend shared with me. And this, I think she's a songwriter. She wrote a blog about the Israelites wandering in the wilderness and how they never got what the miracle that they were asking for, which was the promised land. Like they didn't get that, but they got miracles that they didn't ask for. Their shoes never wore out, and they had bread from heaven that they didn't even know to ask for. And basically her challenge was, the Lord may not be answering that prayer that you are very specifically praying, but don't miss out on, he's answering prayers that you're not praying yet. And those answers, those answers to those prayers might look like the fact that you have a spouse that you can grieve with, that's not going to, you know, rush you out of it, or the fact that you have a friend who checks in on you, or it could just be a sunny day and a good cup of coffee, but those things are good gifts from the Lord.
It's a very, very gloomy day here, so sunny days are on your mind as they are on mine. Yes,
yeah.
How did your children understand, and how were you able, I know listeners who are listening may have questions like, how'd your kids find out you have two beautiful, healthy kids? You know, how did you explain that God is sovereign and he's in control to them at such young ages?
We've always homeschooled, and that has given me the opportunity to have hundreds of these kinds of conversations with my kids. I will say that there is a children's book that exists now. It did not exist back when my kids were really little. It's called The Moon is Round, and it's, from a Christian perspective, a book to talk to your kids about miscarriage. And that, I forget the name of the author, but that book is invaluable for families that are like, I don't know how to even present this topic to you. But for us, we had, I knew an artist, she's a watercolor artist, and her shop is two lace shoes. And I asked her to paint me a restorative family photo that had, as if all of my children had survived and the ages that they would have been at the time. This was probably 2018 or 19. So she made this beautiful watercolor restorative family photo that had my husband and I and all eight kids. And she included the names of all of the babies that we had miscarried over top of them, mainly for our kids. So they've grown up with that photo framed and always hanging in plain sight in our living room. And that photo has, at random times, sparked lots of conversations where they go up to it and they're like, tell me what happened again, and tell me how old would Hope have been, and what happened with Glory. And so my children also came to know the Lord very, very young. And I think that is in large part due to the fact that heaven and Jesus have always felt really near in our home and very real. And having siblings in heaven for them made it feel like this is a real place. And Jesus is their caretaker, and he's our caretaker, and he's taking care of my mom. But I think in homeschooling my kids, one of the things that we have talked about is you don't really know something until you can teach it. And I would say one step further, until you can live it. And being able to not just tell my kids God is good and I trust him, but to live that out has been a challenge. We're both dog people, and you have a mini golden doodle. I have a big old golden doodle. But about 2 years ago or a year and a half, we had just gotten a golden doodle puppy. He was 9 months old.
Oh.
And he passed away suddenly.
Oh, no.
And it was kind of their first personally invested, tragic, unexplained loss. And my husband and I were in the animal hospital, sitting in there. The nurse had just told us, you know, we can do treatments, but like, you're just going to have to keep coming in here every 2 to 3 months because this is not, you know, he's going to die. And
the cost of medical bills that would add up.
And it was devastating, but we looked at each other and just, we have to tell the kids. So we brought them in, and they're both very different, but they're both very, they're thinkers. I thank the Lord for, like, he has just drawn them close and kept them close. And my daughter immediately just got quiet, and I could just see her mind, like, there has to be something we can do. And my son immediately went to, no, we'll just pray. We'll just pray and God will heal him. And you know, we said, no, buddy, God knew that he was gonna pass away. And he entrusted him to our family to love him until the end of his days. And my daughter was just overcome with sadness. But both of them accepted it very quickly, and they were able to say goodbye. But I am a big believer in having tangible expressions of grief.
Mm.
Actually, was just reading this morning, I forget what psalm it is, but he's collected our tears in a tear bottle, mm-hmm. and just how well acquainted he is with our grief. And we have actual tear bottles for each of the babies that we've lost. And then we got one more tear bottle for the dog that we lost, and a little photo album.
Dogs do go to heaven.
I
believe they do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When we first moved here, my dog, Hope, got bit in the butt by another dog. And so I was texting my husband's family about this. My brother-in-law was like, dogs go to heaven except the dogs that bite other dogs in the butt.
I would have to agree with that. I think that's a great way to look at that. But I think that for our family, having that photo that has our restorative family picture, and even having, like, we have a photo album with photos from our dog that passed, our kids are just, they are convinced that Jesus is real.
Yes.
And heaven is close, and it is our home. And that has made it the accountability of living out what I believe very strong. Like, mm-hmm. I have to really live this out.
So what encouragement can you give others who are going through dark times or similar times?
I actually wrote this out. I was thinking about this. One of the books that really helped me, because like I said, there weren't books on miscarriage at the time, is the book Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering by Tim Keller. And you start the book and he says, if you're in the thick of it, skip this first part. Just go to the third part, because this first part is going to feel cruel to you. It was more of a philosophical understanding of what to do with your pain and your grief. And he's like, you don't need to hear that. So I was thinking, there's two people in my head right now to encourage. There's the woman that's in it. She is currently miscarrying, or she's having to accept the fact that her family is not going to look the way that she thought it would look. She's in the thick of it. And to that woman, I would say that the Lord sees you. It's not a glance. It's a gaze, and it's unbreakable, and it's the kind of being seen that makes you see the person who's seeing you. He fully sees you, and he's not rushing you. He's got the space for your questions. he's not offended by them. There's a reason why there's entire chunks of the Old Testament devoted to lament and grief and the Psalms being a great template for grieving.
Job, I mean, yes, yeah. God knows. Mm-hmm. He knows you. He knows what time you wake up, what mm-hmm. time you go to bed. He knows, and he wants to have that relationship with you.
Yeah.
So
just take your time, because he's with you, and you don't need to rush to the other side of it. He's with you in the dark days. He's the same God there.
Mm-hmm.
And just enjoy his presence. And then I see another woman who is on the other side of it. Most of the women my age are, or some of them are past childbearing years. We're raising our kids. We're not having more kids. And so it can be easy to forget the ways that God has comforted you in those really dark days. And so to those women, I would say, remember God's comfort. Was it 2 Corinthians 1, comfort others with the comfort that you've received. But when we get to the other side of pain and suffering, sometimes it's tempting to want to like take that backpack of grief off and just like run your race and not look back. But I think that the Bible, again, is very, there's a theme of remember the Lord, remember what he's done for you, and rehearsing how God has been there for you is going to help you stay tender and compassionate and quick to give out that comfort that you've received.
Yeah, if we don't, by experiencing God's grace and goodness to us, mm-hmm. we can give it to others. And that's one of the reasons why I'm starting this
yeah.
podcast, is God's given me such an incredible gift of being able to function relatively normally again, and being married. And there's things that I don't have, like I don't have kids, but God has given me so much. How could I not encourage others with that? How could I not show the love that I've been given mm-hmm. to others?
Yeah.
So that's one of the main reasons why I want to start this. And you're an awesome first guest to have. How can, for those wanting to hear, I mentioned you are a writer.
Mm-hmm.
So for those wanting to hear more from you, where can they find you?
Well, I have a website. It's rachelhottenwagner.com, and it's very blog style. Things
Can
that I've written.
Spell that?
Yes. RACHEL.
Yes.
HAUGHTONWAGNER. That's full name, the whole thing. So that's kind of my landing page for my writing. But I've also done some writing for the Life Bible app. They have devos on there. And last year, I did a 5-day devo on specifically on miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be found on that website. And I'm working on an Easter devo with them. And so hopefully there'll be more places. But for now, that's kind of the majority.
Nice. Could you please close us out by singing a verse or two of a song that has helped sustain you
mm-hmm.
during those dark times?
Yeah.
You have a beautiful voice, and I would be remiss to not let you shine.
Oh, man. So the song that comes to mind, I don't even know if it really was an anchor during those years, but it's become an anchor now. And the reason that I love it is called Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus. My favorite flower is the sunflower. It turns and faces the sun, and it grows towards the sun. And that has just always been a picture to me of face the sun, grow towards the sun. just fix your eyes on Jesus. And we're actually singing it at our church this Sunday. My good friend Rosie is leading it, and it's such a rock. So you want me to sing this song? I don't have my piano player husband with me to put me in the right key. So I'll just try to find one.
Think of Carrie Underwood singing it a cappella.
A real pro can sing without the track. Yeah. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on and starting this journey with me. It's so exciting. Thank you for listening to the Authentically Rachel podcast. Please do me a favor and hit the like and subscribe button so you can be notified when the next story comes out. It also helps a lot with the algorithm. That way, more people can be encouraged by these conversations. Our suffering has a purpose to strengthen us and draw us closer to God, even when it seems like no one else can understand our situation. God knows, and He is right there beside us. I'm Rachel, and this is Authentically Rachel.